Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprises throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program recorded weekly at WJR in Detroit. During the spring and summer of 2015, only the second hour of our show, which features listeners' questions, is heard live each week from 5 to 6 p.m. every Saturday on WJR 760 AM in Detroit. However, both hours of this show are available each week on this podcast and are available to all of our affiliates across the state of Michigan. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor Podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hi there, this is Foster Brown, and welcome to the merry month of May. We got a great program lined up for you. We're going to be looking at some new technology, battery technology announced by Elon Musk called the Powerwall. And some folks from Next Energy, a great organization here in Michigan promoting energy conservation and development of energy technologies, are going to be with us as well, along with some folks from Comcast with some tips on spring technology checkup. All that coming up this first hour. I don't think we can accuse any of us of being spring chickens, but we are certainly all energized by the merry month of May and the beautiful, finally the buds are coming out here in Michigan. It's been a while since I've seen anything green on trees.
You know, when I was a kid, we'd be skiing, we'd have the boat in, the dock in, we'd be skiing the middle of April, and there was always a late April snowstorm or something. Yeah. I remember 4 inches of snow on the dock one year.
And oh, dear.
So, but it's happened.
We're past that.
I'm really happy.
We're safely past that. That's the voice of Mr. Gary Baker, by the way.
I actually put my windshield scraper away, so we're done. We're done with winter.
It's official.
Yeah, yep, we're done with winter.
Ed Riddell back in. I had to get the shovel out of my back of my car. Do you have it too, Cal Couchin?
You know, what really amazes me is that when Gary used to ski back then, the boat, did it have all those animals still in it, or did you take them out?
Oh, my God.
I'm not quite that old. Not quite.
Well, guys, it's been a big week in technology in many ways. Microsoft held their Build conference, and yep. There were some things that came out of that. We'll talk maybe a little bit about.
Yeah, they're on the edge now, eh?
Oh, my. We'll get to that one.
More to come.
One more time. The other thing that happened is that Elon Musk on Friday night revealed the Powerwall. We'll talk more about this remarkable battery technology. But, Cal, I wanted to ask you about something that I saw that came out this week with Apple's earnings. What's interesting to see is that China is now creeping up and is almost at the place of taking over second place in terms of areas of the world for income for Apple. It's having a huge impact on it. In 2011, I think it said that China was the largest smartphone market in the world.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise any of us since they're the largest market in the
world. Yeah, I mean, period. My question for you, Cal, as a Apple user, is what impact do you think that's going to have on Apple in terms of maybe the kind of things they produce or the way that they produce them or devices that they put out?
I think it's going to dramatically change time frames on how we get products from Apple. I think it's going to maybe even possibly change how products are introduced. You know, normally they're introduced here in America and then they go to different countries around, that sort of thing. With that market over there being so big and so money rich, I won't be surprised they'll start introducing product over there first and then eventually flow over to this side of the world.
Yep. And that's certainly true for Apple, but traditionally for smartphones, usually when Americans travel to other countries, they look at the people in Germany and France and Spain, and they usually have much cooler phones than we do, and they're not available to the United States until 6 months, a year after.
Well, here's something that's
But Apple's just the opposite.
The other thing I found out, too, it's over in Japan. Smartphones, generally with the younger generation that's over there, if they keep a phone more than 6 months, it's unusual.
Really?
Because as soon as a new model comes out, they'll switch and go to the next new model on anything. It's just amazing. They turn phones over like crazy. And I would imagine that that might be a trend over in Asia completely.
That's interesting. So you might see more, a quicker turnover, do you think? Gary, what are your thoughts?
Well, they're certainly not spending money on software. Because Microsoft, just in the last few weeks, has announced that they're cutting their price of Office down to $29. And people went, wait a minute, we have to pay $400-something for Office? And if I move to China, I get it for $29? I said, yeah, well, people rip them off anyway. That's the only way they can curb the piracy. Yeah. Because, well, if they make it cheap enough, then people won't steal it. They'll buy it if it's only $29.
So. It sounds like our medical industry. Really, I mean, if you want to get cheap drugs, you go to Cuba or Canada, or if you want to get cheap software, you go to China.
or just rip it off, right?
Well, I'm wondering if it will begin to impact design as well, Cal. You know, because if you will, American tastes, or if you will, North American tastes and European tastes have been the ones that have been catered to up until this point, because it still is a huge portion of the income. Maybe a third more income comes from these areas of the world. But with China having this kind of an impact, do you think that it'll also have an impact on design as well?
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I was looking at an old Steve Jobs introduction of the iPhone when it first came out.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And he compared it to all the big ones that were out at the time, the Blackberries, the Palm Trios, and all that sort of thing. And all of them, he said, guess what? They all have a keyboard on it. And if you wanted to change the features of the phone, it might require you changing the keys, which you can't do easily. Yeah. And that was the reason why you didn't get a keyboard on here. You had a flat face.
Brilliant.
So because of this type of technology, I think rather than, even if it might be a difference on how they may want to do things over in China as opposed to in the Western world, mm-hmm. I think they'll just do it as a software change more than a hardware difference.
I wonder if there's any aesthetic kind of changes as well. I know gold is big, I understand, in China. That's huge. You know, that's a very status kind of thing to have something that's gold.
I'm sure we're 40,000 of those Apple Watches that were gold that were sold. There's a lot of them over there.
I bet. Yeah.
You know, I see an awful lot of moving from what's normally been considered left-brain-directed activity, right? Where, you know, engineering was really important, so feature function. We're moving, you know, as a society, as actually everywhere in the world, we're moving away from that feature function, you know, directed kind of right-brain thinking, or left-brain thinking to right-brain thinking. So it's all about design. It's all about art. It's all about the way it feels, the way it looks, and the status that it brings. And Apple, you know, that's one of the most status type symbols in the computer world is having
an
Apple.
And you certainly have millennia of design influence in China that we brought to bear on this, along with the function and everything else. Kind of interesting to think of the changes that may take place in Apple coming up because of the source of so much of their income in China. Hey, standing by in just a moment, we'll be talking about the Tesla Powerwall with a gentleman from Next Energy here in Michigan. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And my guests in studio, of course, are my usual posse. That's Mr. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson. And we're delighted as well to welcome somebody else to the conversation, and that is Mr. Dave Hurt, who is with us, Hurst, rather, who is the Director of Market Analysis for Next Energy here in Michigan. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
And especially doing it last minute here, because I was just a little more than 24 hours ago, I think it was, that Elon Musk in Los Angeles introduced something called the Powerwall, which is a battery technology that, at least ostensibly says it could be revolutionary. And I guess that's part of why we were inviting you along to talk about that, because I know that Next Energy is involved in promoting technology like this. You're a convener, collaborator, and a service provider that accelerates advanced energy technologies throughout a whole bunch of industries. So I was interested in kind of getting some of your feedback about the Powerwall, first of all. I guess it'd be good maybe if we could describe the Powerwall and its significance as a battery.
Sure. So the Powerwall is in In basic terms, it's a big battery. It's sort of like an electric vehicle where it's got a big battery that actually powers the vehicle. This would be, in a similar way, a big battery that would power your house. It's designed fairly sleekly, depending on kind of your opinion of these things. You know, it's got kind of an Apple-esque design, I would say. And it comes in two different sizes. There's a 7 kilowatt hour and a 10 kilowatt hour. And I don't want to go too deep in the weeds on that, but in essence, a kilowatt hour is the amount of electricity you use within an hour.
Gotcha.
A typical home will use between 13 to 20 kilowatt hours in a day, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on kind of the size of the home and what you've got in it and that sort of thing. So neither of these batteries are really designed to power a home for the entire day.
Right.
What they are designed to do is something that's called peak shaving or reducing peak load. So at certain times of the day, you'll have your house will use a lot more energy than at other times. Like right now, for instance, you think about when you go to work, your house may be empty. There's not a lot happening there. Everybody kind of comes home at roughly the same time. You turn on the big screen TV. You start cooking. All of this stuff. You see energy spike at that point where people are using a lot more. And so this battery could be used at that time to power the house. So you're not using power from the grid during that time.
Right. Dave Hirst, by the way, is with us. He is the director of market analysis for Next Energy. Dave, is this, and guys, feel free to chime in on this too, is this really a new technology? Is there anything special about this, or has he just managed to pack, has Elon Musk and Tesla kind of repackaged something in a new way?
In essence, I would say he's done some slick packaging of a product that has existed. He has definitely lowered the price. The quotes that I've seen, that $3,000 price for the battery is roughly, I'd say, 25 to 30% lower than kind of typical pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 20 to 30% lower. So he's definitely got kind of an aggressive price position on it as well.
Right.
But it's not something new, per se.
Okay.
So this has been done.
Okay, I'm missing something. So Elon Musk has this power wall, but it has to get its energy from somewhere.
Right.
So you're saying that basically they shave electricity during off hours, and he distributes it during peak hours.
Yeah, and it could be coming from solar sources.
It could be coming from solar sources. Anywhere.
And Dave will tell you that there are different pricing depending on when you take the electricity off the grid, right, Dave?
Well, yes and no. So that honestly depends on where you are. Here in Michigan, we do not have, that's called time-of-use pricing, and we do not have time-of-use pricing unless you're a very large, commercial operator. Residents, consumers like myself, we do not have time-of-use pricing.
Okay.
So my electricity price is the same until I've used a certain amount. Now, that's where it could benefit. I believe... our utility is DTE Energy, and I believe it's the first 16 or 17 kilowatt hours are one price, and then it jumps after that. So if you typically use 20 kilowatt hours, and you could use this to cover the other three, then you could stay in that lower price point.
I gotcha.
But in places like California, they definitely have different prices for different times of day.
Mm-hmm. And he
lives in California, and that's what he's making the market for, right?
Yeah.
Until we pass a law that makes sense.
Yeah.
So based upon
energy
the
policy.
So based upon the alleged price of this device, what would be the payback time that we would get on something like this? How many years would you have to have it?
I haven't done the calculation, but it would be a very long time.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that this is going to do, we hope, is drive down the cost of storing electricity, because storing electricity is the hardest thing to store. You cannot store it.
Yeah.
You need battery technology. When we think of home generators. I have a generator at home. It's a 10,000 watt unit because I lose electricity in Ortonville about 8 times a year, if not more. Last year I lost it for 29 days total in 2014. And so I have to have a generator that I haul out of the garage. Okay, so, but I have to use gasoline. If there was an economical way to store electricity, this is hopefully will drive it and drive the cost down. And that's what I'm looking at this for, is it because he has a huge battery plant. And if they keep on making innovations in lithium ion battery technology, General Motors is also making inroads into that. You have, you know, Tesla's doing the same thing. I mean, we're hoping that this will spur innovation and drive the cost of battery electrical storage down for home consumers.
And Dave, that was part of the reason why I asked you to become anything, because I know Next Energy is involved in promoting that kind of new technology.
Yes, so we work with a number of early stage companies and technology developers that are doing not just lithium ion, but other technologies as well. One that has received press recently is called SATKE3. And they are a solid-state battery technology that's actually not yet brought to market, but they are targeting. Actually, I guess I'm not quite sure where they're going to end up targeting. I don't believe it's going to be large battery packs like this, but they're one that we're looking at. We also support some advanced lead acid. So both of these are outside of the lithium ion, so there's a lot of work going on within lithium ion, but I don't want to forget also that there's a lot going on, you know, outside of lithium ion as well. One of the organizations that just recently won a technology challenge that we had is called Advanced Battery Concepts. They're doing a advanced lead acid, so it's not your typical lead acid that's in your car battery. It's a different design to that.
Dave, could you hang around for a little bit?
Sure.
Because what I want to do is, you've mentioned something I think it's important for our listeners to know about as well, that here in Michigan, there is a lot of development that's going on as well. And while Elon Musk, and I think justifiably, has gathered a lot of interest for the way he's packaged this kind of technology, there is, as you said, and Next Energy is involved in promoting this, a lot of research that's going on in the state of Michigan. We're talking with Dave Hurst, who's the director of market analysis at Next Energy, and they're very much involved in promoting, and as you heard, for instance, often being able to put grants together to help companies. As a matter of fact, Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News, one of his headlines is about something that you folks have done just recently in terms of some match grants. Can you talk a little bit about those and what they're promoting?
I can talk a bit about them. I'm not I'm not closely involved in that work, so...
That's all right. I tell you what. I caught you with an unexpected question there, and I do have a little more information that I'll bring in. Matter of fact, in the next hour, we may have Mike give a little more information on that, but the exciting thing is that developments are going on there. I want to come back in a little bit, in just a moment after break, talk a little bit more about the technologies involved in batteries and what's going on here in the state of Michigan. In this world of gadgets where they seem to be multiplying like bunny rabbits, we have had an announcement made this last week about a very important development, that is a new battery is being presented by Elon Musk. It's called the Tesla Powerwall. And Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson and I have been discussing some of these details with our guest who's been online. He is from Next Energy. That's Dave Hurst. He's the director of market analysis for Next Energy, an organization in our state of Michigan that is involved in promoting and enabling and advancing in as many ways as they possibly can advanced energy technology. So, Dave, again, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Yeah. You know, Dave, Forbes, I was reading an article just, I guess, this morning, and they were saying that, oh, this is just one of Tesla's, another toy for the rich and famous, right? That it's so expensive. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, every new technology enter the market pricey, and then it's going to drop. When you start putting this technology and maybe the next version of it and the next version, along with solar energy, personal solar energy systems on your home, or some wind energy, again, you know, up on your home. And when you start to see some of the legislation that was passed around the ability to sell back and put energy back onto the grid, I think this is just one piece of that overall puzzle, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you make a very good point about kind of the first, the first step is always into sort of that higher end market. And a lot of that is because this technology, until it reaches a large production scale, it frankly is more expensive. And
sure.
You know, you look at an easy comparison for people to make is you think about car technology, and you look at sort of, you know, when were the first sort of wireless connections for vehicles, and you know, the in-vehicle infotainment type stuff. All of that started in your luxury vehicles.
Yes.
You know, back probably in the mid-1990s, mm-hmm. and now you can buy them on Ford Focuses. And
and you know, and no one has ever told Tesla in years past that who would ever pay a premium for an electric car, right? And now we know many people would pay a premium.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting about this, at least in the commentaries that I've seen, and Dave, maybe you can react to this, is that the price of the unit right now. Now, by the way, that doesn't include Ed the inverter, which I understand is an important part of that too, right?
Well, yeah, it's mm-hmm. a, yes, yeah. it is. Yeah.
That is the what turns the electricity
from DC
DC to AC.
DC to AC,
and you need to have one of those as well. So that's kind of a hit, if you will, hidden cost involved in this. Yeah. But am I right, guys, that this is essentially, though, at $3,500 for the kind of capacity they're talking, maybe the 10 kilowatt hour, is actually really good. I mean, it's low compared to what's out there right now.
Well, when you think about it, this is how much does this weigh? Can we find that out? Because I'd love to put it on a boat. Right, go into the marina, you know, charge up over the night, and then go spend three nights on the hook and have great energy along with your solar panels and whatnot on the boat.
Right,
so,
right.
I don't see why it shouldn't be done. I guess.
Yeah, I want to. I think the inverter comment is actually an interesting question. Inverters should not be kind of overlooked in all of this. Certainly the battery technology is kind of getting the big headlines,
mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of effort going on around inverters as well. Certainly Next Energy is working on you know, understanding kind of the inverter market and kind of how the whole power electronics industry within the U.S. is working. And there's a lot of interest right now in improving all of that for a couple reasons. One, coming back to the weight question, how much can you reduce the weight of the inverters? That's particularly important when you're talking about transportation.
Sure.
But then, in addition, how much can you improve the efficiency? Because when you're running these inverters, so you generate, through your solar panels, you generate electricity in DC, you store it in DC in your batteries, but then when you plug something into your wall, you want it to come out in AC. And so you have to have that inverter between kind of that plug and the batteries. Well, if you may lose between, 3 to 5% of whatever you store just in doing this conversion for the inverter, that means out of your 10 kilowatt hour battery, you're losing half a kilowatt hour potentially.
Wow,
just in conversion.
I see what you're saying.
Right, and that goes back to the original Edison-Tesla thing, where Edison foresaw everything in DC, but you can't transmit DC very far. And so one of the things Tesla said is, like, pretty soon, when this technology evolves, you'll be able to have your own electricity either in a small community or individual homes, and everything will be DC. Thus, you won't have to have anything AC in your house. You could start buying. What he was inferring also is that you could start having just DC appliances in your house.
Yeah, so why don't we just admit Edison was wrong way back then, and I'll switch to DC. We'd be done. No inverters.
Because he was a friend of Ford, and you know what Ford means here in Detroit.
Yeah.
How about around the world? And one of the other things I was curious about was if this Powerwall technology, one of the things they said was it would be really significant in developing areas of the world where there wasn't a grid, and that they could use wind or solar or whatever else to generate the power, and then to be able to store it without wires.
Yeah, that's certainly an attractive, benefit, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, as you're talking about the developing world, the challenge becomes price. Certainly, and certainly if you're going to be doing things wirelessly, that could potentially add to the cost. But, that's always kind of the challenge in that. It does certainly present a very attractive model.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of how do you get around kind of the business case for that.
Yep. I had a kind of interesting trip this couple days ago. I drove up to Central Michigan University to visit my granddaughters, who had a special event. They were receiving a recognition for their minor. And we passed by, I think it's St. John's, and almost as far as the eye could see were these windmills. Just incredible up there. And apparently they stretch from about mid-Michigan. There's a corridor there that goes over to Saginaw Bay, I think.
Well, and past there, actually, because if you go up the Bruce Peninsula in Canada, go over across the Sarnia and go up towards Tobermory at the tip, you cannot go anywhere without seeing just tons of windmills.
Dave, I was just curious, in terms of Next Energy and the kind of things that excite you people as you take a look at, and the ones you want to promote, what are the kind of things that, in terms of power storage and generation and some of these other things, that are really kind of interesting that you see that are the cutting edge here in our state of Michigan?
Sure. So you mentioned the Match Energy grants. One of the grant awardees that won that is Navitas. And they are doing a lithium-ion battery similar to what the Powerwall is, and they are actually looking at large format, kind of the same sort of thing that would be for transportation and grid storage, those sorts of things. Certainly, I mentioned that. The advanced lead acid, we have a few companies actually that are working on advanced lead acid. It's basically a different design to the current lead acid batteries. The chemistry ultimately is kind of similar, but it's a different design that improves upon sort of the traditional lead acid, lowers it in weight, those sorts of things. So those are some of the big ones. I mentioned the solid-state batteries from SAFT-3. They are kind of a spin-out of Ann Arbor that is, honestly, I don't know that much about the battery. They've been pretty secretive because, as you can imagine. this is a pretty competitive area. So,
wow.
But that would be sort of the next generation of batteries. There's some other technologies that aren't necessarily coming out of Michigan that are being looked at for kind of next generation batteries as well, but I think ultimately what, this conversation and certainly what the news is showing is that there's a lot of space for this kind of energy storage, and I think this idea that there's going to be one size fits all is not real. I think there's going to be a lot of different technologies that fit different needs and different niches.
I'm glad, Dave, you mentioned that, because that's kind of what I wanted to do with the Powerwall, and Elon Musk is a showman.
Absolutely.
He has an incredible way of doing that, as you said, very sleekly designed, etc. But don't let people know that there's a lot of else that's being developed and going on. And am I right in the sense that Michigan seems to have a peculiarly concentrated area of energy development?
Yeah, absolutely, and I would say that it's not that peculiar. I mean, there's been a lot of effort around the automotive batteries,
right?
And that's where a lot of this comes from. Is transportation is noted as needing batteries to move into electric vehicles and plug-in vehicles, and even hybrids have switched to lithium-ion in a lot of cases.
Right.
Yeah, that just didn't happen by accident.
No, and as Gary has pointed out often, a lot of the technology that we enjoy here and the advances have been because we have the automotive industry, which has been breaking ground all along. Dave Hurst, thank you so much for being with us. He's the Director of Market Analysis at Next Energy, an organization that's promoting the development of these kind of technologies in our fair state. Dave, thanks for being with us. Take care.
All right, thank you.
Back in just a moment to talk about spring cleanup. I want to thank the folks behind the glass. Eric, thank you very much for juggling grenades back there. He is our engineer and also our phone screener. And, of course, Gary, Ed, and Cal are in studio with me here today. But we're also delighted to welcome to our program Michelle Gilbert, who is a vice president of public relations at Comcast. Michelle, good to have you back in studio with us again.
It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we did a program on spring cleaning, kind of from the point of view of, just getting our devices back in shape again. But you have come with us, have presented to us something kind of neat. It says 4 tips for spring technology checkup. And I should mention, by the way, somebody else who's in studio with you is somebody who is very much involved in that technology. That's Bill Babbitt, who is the Technical Operations Supervisor. Am I right? Did I get
That's
the full
correct.
Title?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you as well. But Michelle, let's talk about the four tips that you folks have that are offering to our listeners and to your Comcast subscribers on ways of getting things checked up.
Right.
For the spring. Good time to start.
Okay. So, you know, spring is, there's nothing special about the springtime for checking on your technology, but it's the time of year that we change our batteries anyway. We clean out our closets, get rid of old toys from the
Chase
kids.
Chase dust bunnies
exactly.
and things like that.
Exactly. So it makes sense. It's a good time of year because you're doing all that anyway to take a look at your technology. And there are things that we can do to make sure that we're getting the speeds that we want from our internet.
Absolutely.
As well as maybe getting the most value out of the products and services that you're paying for.
Mm.
So let's start with some of the easier ones.
Okay.
Most people who have internet, cable, how often are they actually logging into their account? Not very often.
No.
And I would recommend that people do it once or twice a year. And the reason is that your internet provider, your cable provider, whoever you have service from, we're all innovating all the time. We're always adding new products and services. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, it's free for you. So if you go to your account, you can see some of the new things that are available. And I'll give you a very practical example.
Sure.
Comcast, for example, we have a My Account app that you can get on all your wireless devices, and, mm-hmm. and most providers do. But we have recently enhanced it, and it gives you the ability to do some very minor troubleshooting on your own before you have to call in. So it gives you the opportunity to maybe take care of something that is very easy within a matter of a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And if for whatever reason it can't be fixed just with your own troubleshooting, it actually gives you the option to determine the time that's most convenient for you to have someone call you back.
That's excellent.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. I'll put a scenario out real quick. I'm having a problem with my wireless in my house with my Comcast. I've got the app on my telephone or my smart or my tablet or that sort of thing, but it's using it wirelessly. Can I go onto the cellular network and still run those diagnostic tools effectively?
Yes, you can.
Good.
Bill is nodding in the background.
Yes, I'm nodding.
Yeah. I brought Bill as my security blanket because I'm a generalist.
I got you.
But he knows a heck of a lot more than me.
For those of you who are watching at home on your radio, I should have looked to my left instead of my right. But that's fine. But yeah, that's good to know because, you're trying to get a problem solved. And if a couple of clicks on your wireless device, you could be able to fix it yourself. Yeah, it saves you that much time.
And I know both of you can respond to that Comcast, with your Xfinity apps, have a whole bunch of things out there for getting people connected, which are really neat as well.
Yes.
I want to quickly move on to make sure we get all these points. The next one is don't double pay. I like to hear that.
Right. Well, everybody needs security on their computer. We pay for antivirus. We pay for spyware, all those things. Depending on who your provider is, that may be a part of your internet package. How many emails a year do you get from Norton saying it's time to upgrade?
Yes.
Maybe it's not. So before you upgrade, take a look at what is already included in your package.
Very
it might save you a few dollars every year.
And that kind of reinforces where you say go back and sign in once a year, maybe every 6 months to your account and check and see what things have been added.
Exactly. See what's new. A lot of our customers don't even realize who have cable that they can actually take their TV wherever they go. So if you're on vacation and your kids want to rent a movie at the hotel, rather than spending $15, you can actually log in to your tablet or your laptop and watch your TV. There's like 75 streaming stations, and all of your online on-demand content is
online. More good stuff to know
about. And you can do that on your phone, too.
Yes,
Michelle,
you
just saved me
Yay!
A ton of Discord at my house because, you know, not only can I get the Comcast TV to Go app, I can get the My Account, which you just mentioned. I can get this Comcast Cable Communications, so it's Xfinity Connect, so I got to figure out what that is. But it's the next one that's saving me. It's Xfinity TV Remote. Yeah. I no longer have to go out looking for the remote. I could just use my phone as a remote. Well, oh my gosh.
We could have remote wars in the house.
And the great thing about the X1 TV remote, if you have our X1 platform, which is the most sophisticated platform that we've since introduced, is that you can actually use the voice activation to tell your TV what to do. So if you say ESPN Sports, it's going to go straight to it.
Wow, that is excellent. Okay, moving on. I want to move on a couple of other ones.
All right, you got to tell me what that is.
Expand your Wi-Fi signal. And Bill, you may have to pop in on this one. Expand your Wi-Fi signal. Explain that one in terms.
Okay, so whenever your Wi-Fi isn't working the way you think it should, you are always immediately angry with your carrier. Before you get angry, just calm down, and there's some things that you might be able to do. So let's start with, where is your router placed?
Right.
Okay. Your router should be out in an open area, on a maybe a central level, mm-hmm. not tucked away underneath your desk, next to all of your electronics, not next to a microwave, not in a room with all windows, because you're going to bounce that signal right out to your neighbors. Okay? So take a look at where your router is and make sure that it's in an open area. You know, if you have a multi-level home, you don't want it in the basement underneath the staircase. For some reason, we love to hide
them,
boxes.
Because the boxes are so sexy and attractive. No, I'm just kidding.
But they give you what you want, and you want to make sure that whatever devices, remember, Wi-Fi is radio frequency, so the further away you get from your router, the less signal strength you're going to have. So you're still going to have signal strength. You're just not going to have as strong of a signal.
Quick question
strength.
For you, Bill.
Absolutely.
I know that my router has both 2.5 and 5 gigahertz.
Correct.
And you can choose between them. I live in a little apartment, so distance is not big for me.
So
what is the significance?
There's advantages and disadvantages to both, right? So 2.4 gigahertz is more congested. So you have more devices on that frequency.
Like microwaves.
You've got microwaves, cordless phones, Bluetooth, Zigbee devices. Some of the newer smart meters can interfere, right?
Okay.
But you get further distance with the 2.4 gigahertz. Now with 5 gigahertz, it's less congested. It can be more freed up. You have more overlapping channels within that 5 gigahertz band. And you get some better speeds, but your distance is shortened quite a bit.
Okay.
And, you know, your denser materials like your countertops, your walls, stucco walls with chicken wire in them, that kind of thing, you know, can really absorb that signal and cause problems.
Okay, just quick account.
So would it be a good idea to put your router in, your wireless router in your house at the highest possible point?
Absolutely. It depends. If you have an upstairs and a basement that you want to use, you would want it on that middle floor, right? So you're getting the best coverage. So if you think of a wireless router, it's a transmitter, right? Just like we're on the air now. So if you suspended that wireless router in the middle of a field, you're going to get about a 300-foot bubble around that wireless router. Now you throw walls in, you throw countertops, you throw hardwood floors, that bubble gets smaller and smaller and smaller, right?
So good. And that's kind of advice that you had, the folks at Comcast had to give. Now, the last point was maximize internet performance. We're talking about that, I guess, in some ways.
Correct. Yeah, we are talking about that, and certainly where your router is placed plays a role in that. The other thing that you need to take into consideration is how many devices do you have and how are you using them? Because streaming music, streaming video, if you're a heavy gamer, that's going to use a lot more of your bandwidth than just maybe checking email. Another tip that I recently learned from Bill is that your router can only speak one language. And just like all of our technology, we continue to increase the sophistication level of the technology.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are giving your, say, your old iPod to your 8-year-old, that's not using the latest technology, and your router is going to only speak one language, and it's going to go to the lowest language possible.
Ooh, very important to know. Listen, we have run out of time here, but Michelle and Bill are going to stick around for our second hour. We'll have them with us to answer some questions for you as well, by the way, because that's when you call in to 800-859-0957.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll find past podcasts, our toolkit of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget, look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Hello, this is Foster Brown, and we've got a whole studio full of people here to help answer your questions about computers. During the summertime, between 5 and 6 p.m. in the evenings here on WJR. It's a time for we open the shop here to answer your computer questions. All you have to do is give us a call at 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. And we got some folks here from Comcast to help answer some questions for you, too. Well, thank you so much for allowing us to open the doors to our shop here to answer your questions about your computers. And again, the phone number is 800-859-0957. I'm Foster Brown, the producer of the program and co-host along with Gary Baker, who's been with me now. We're working on our 18th year here, answering people's questions. This is how we started, right, Gary?
That's right. And we've never strayed from the two things that we said we were going to do, why we're doing this show, because it's certainly not the money. and that is to promote internet technology here in the area. And we're going to do that here in a minute.
Yeah.
But also then to help people have a better online experience. And that's where you come in as the listeners. You have to call us with questions and give us an opportunity to maybe help you have that better online experience.
And Kevin at White Lake is already lined up, and the rest of you can come on and line up with him at 800-859-0957. Part of the crew answering questions here. Also, Mr. Ed Rudell. Good to have you here, Eddie.
Always great to be back. Got the kids back from college and disinfecting their computers as we speak.
And Cal Carson with us as well.
And you don't mean with bleach.
No.
You know, it's a real miracle, Gary. I think you guys have done something here because this internet thing seems to be catching on. So you're doing a good job.
We're also delighted to have with us in studio Michelle Gilbert, who is a vice president for public relations at Comcast. And in the last hour, by the way, Michelle did a great presentation along with Bill, who was with her as well. Bill Babbitt is one of the techs there. And Bill has been helping us to understand Wi-Fi. So if you listen to our podcast, which will be available Sunday night on our homepage at internetadvisor.net, you'll be able to catch that portion. But if you go to our homepage right now, you'll also be able to see the printed article, which is the 4 tips for getting spring technology checkup from Comcast. It's there. You can just click on that. You can read those. And Michelle, thank you for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you. We're going to have you available, by the way, along with Bill. Bill is here as well as a tech for Comcast. So if you have a question about something technical on Comcast, she brought him along as insurance.
Right. I call him my security blanket.
Security blanket. All right. So Bill's going to be here to help with that as well if you have a particular question. Some fascinating things came up in the last hour in terms of, for instance, bandwidth and also how certain devices can actually kind of dumb down your Wi-Fi. We'll talk about that as well. But again, the number is 800-859-0957. And we have Mr., we have here with us every week, and that's Mr. MI Tech News. Mike Brennan is with us with a brand new web page, and you're certainly must be feeling mighty proud about having that up, Mike.
Well, it's like birthing a baby. It's been going on for 9 months, but finally we got her done.
Oh, great. And that's a brand new website. You go to mitechnews.com. And by the way, what is that? That's just a great collection of both print and now audio and soon video information about technology in the state of Michigan and entrepreneurship. And let's give us some examples, Mike, of the kind of things with some headlines that you have there. Challenge Detroit hosts the final for Fall Fellows. What's that about?
Well, it's been going on, obviously, for 3 years. This is the fourth year coming up. And it's all these really great entrepreneurs from around the country are encouraged to come to Detroit, live here, work here, do internships here. Some of them are from the area. They're not all outsiders. But most of them stay, and they stay working in Detroit. They're part of the revitalization that's going on in the downtown corridor with all those young entrepreneurs down there. And so the fourth-year interns are being tested now, and the ones that are selected, the 25, they start next fall.
Wow. Okay. Another one. By the way, I just came back from Central Michigan University, where my granddaughters are wrapping up their studies, and I see that they've gotten a grant to aid in the Great Lakes Coastal Wetland Studies.
Yeah, it's going to be some sort of mathematic model that they're going to work up, and it's going to essentially identify which areas need restorations and what's feasible, in other words, what we can afford to do. And so they've got a $100,000 or so dollar grant that they're going to use to build this model, and then CMU is going to execute this.
And, Mike, in our first hour, we talked about Elon Musk's Powerwall, that new battery that's available for both homes and businesses. And we had someone from Next Energy with us who was on the line, and he gave us a great deal of help in terms of figuring out what this technology was and also talking about the things that Next Energy is promoting. Dave Hurst was with us, who's the director of the market analysis at Next Energy. But you have a headline about their award that they just gave out, three awards, actually.
Actually, that wasn't on my list.
Oh, sorry. Snuck that one by you.
Yes. They gave out a series of awards a couple weeks ago, I believe it was. I sat in on that session, and it was for a really cool technology that's being developed for the auto industry. And again, these are energy-related. They do different sort of things. They did that in conjunction with the MIT Alliance and a few other folks. So it was a great program, and it happened during the SAE conference.
By the way, folks, a warning, don't try to sneak these headlines by the editor. He's got too many to remember. Mike, these are just kind of examples, or if you will, little hors d'oeuvres of the things that you offer every week. On Fridays, you send an email out to people who are subscribers, and they get all of these headlines about news and technology and entrepreneurship, plus a lot of other resources like the podcast to our program and IT and the D and the Digital Divas and so much more that's coming down the line. And folks, you might think this will cost you an awful lot of money. Not cost nothing. Simply go to internetadvisor.net. That's our homepage. Scroll down and then click on the subscribe now button, and that will simply be it. And then every week you'll get these headlines and many, many more, plus all the other resources that Mike Brennan has put together there. Mike, thanks again so much, and congratulations on your brand new website.
Boy,
yeah, we're
nice,
excited,
Mike,
about it. Like I say, it's really cool. If you liked our newsletter, you'll love our website.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mike, for being there. That's a co-published or co-sponsored newsletter that we put together with MI Tech News. Hey, coming up, we've got a lot of people in the studio here, including Michelle Gilbert, who is with us as well, and Mr. Babbitt, who is the tech here, is in studio, along with Gary, Ed, and Cal. So here's the phone number again, 800-859-0957. We're going to start taking your questions in just a moment when we return with the Internet Advisor. Well, the computer store is open here, as it will be all throughout the spring and summer. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson here, ready to answer your questions at 800-859-0957. And today, we're also fortunate to have Michelle Gilbert, who is the Vice President of Public Relations for Comcast, with us. Michelle, thank you again for being with us in here.
My pleasure.
And we have Bill Babbitt, who is he's one of the technical supervisors there also, behind the scenes at Comcast. And so,
glad to be here.
Thanks. And so if you have a question, by the way, that might bounce off of Comcast and some of your service that you're getting from them, we have people here who can give you some answers as well. But for the rest of you out there who simply have a problem with your computer, it's not working, or your email, or whatever else it may be, this is when you step into our little computer shop here and get some answers to your questions. And it's just as simple as calling 800-859-0957. And there's a whole bunch of people in here. So,
and you want to call now because the prices are at its best.
Kevin from Wolverine Lake, thank you, sir, so much for hanging on there. And how can we help you here at the Internet Advisor?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. I thank you for your help. Real quick, I've been playing around with IoT stuff, ESP 86, 8266 from Espresso, some little Wi-Fi modules you can pick up and use, run AT commands from, and things like that. But anyhow, I've been using Hyperterminal all the time and updating the modules as I go on. And I have found an app for a Chromebook. Chrome runs faster. It's, you know, I'm not used to SSH or Crush. So I'm wondering if you got a decent extension that I can use off a Chromebook or even an Android phone, if I can run AT commands through this little module, a serial interface. I'm using a virtual USB right now, FPDI. And the newest version I updated on these little modules, just don't work too good.
Hang on, Kevin. Because you've gotten deep into technology here, and the guys here, they're getting frowns on their faces.
Well, you know, because, well, I know that old modems used to use AT commands, and I wasn't aware that Wi-Fi modems also supported that. I mean, I know there were a number of commands you could get into the back end of wireless routers that accepted commands, but those were mostly Linux commands. What were you referring to again? Because you're messing with the serial interface.
Yeah, it's an ESP AT8266 Wi-Fi module from Hong Kong or whatever, and you're able to control lights, relays, buzzers, etc. It's got its own built-in. You can have it, make it a server, send data to a link, retrieve data, etc. It's a real nice module. And I'm just communicating with it using AT commands, which it has stored into it. And I was using a app for Chrome called Browser Serial Port Monitor.
Okay.
And I was able to communicate with it 11.5.2 with no problem. But when I updated the SDK on it, I can't seem to get a decent serial extension to work off of Chrome. Hyperterminal works great off the Windows, but you know, I got to sit there and it takes a while to boot and all. And Chromebook works fast. I'm not familiar
Okay, hang on. We got a lot of information to sort through.
Well, because basically, I haven't messed with anything. Since he's talking about using like Hyperterminal to send serial commands to a serial interface,
right?
And I haven't messed with that in years. And he was also talking about the Chromebook. He was using something, but now it's stopped working
because of an update that took place.
Right, right. I don't think I can help him with this.
Okay. I know, Bill, did you understand any of
a little bit. He's looking for a browser extension, so I no.
Yeah. It sounds very specialized. I don't think I could find anything.
You know, the one place you might want to go take a look at, though, would be Usebox Project. They do a lot of ESP8266 AT command type stuff. Whether or not they have an extension for you, I don't know, but they definitely have a community portal out there that you can check into.
What is that? What is that again? Cal?
It's called Usebox. It's spelled actually UZEBOX.org, and it's an open source project out there for ESP8266.
So it's UZEBOX.org. And I think, you know, this is one of those good cases where, certainly we don't have all those experiences, but you've got a user group out there that does focus on this, and I think that'll be a great resource for you. So that?
And you've tried just Google, right, their extensions, because they have a fair number of extensions for Chrome right on the Google site.
Yes, I've gotten one of them. Okay. I was able to use if I had these little modules and older SDKs. But when I mop it up to the new SDK, has some really great commands, it just don't talk to it where the dynamics.
Okay, Kev, it does sound like you're going to get more results from going to a user group where people speak the same language you do and have experienced some of those problems.
And also check developer.google.chrome, too, not just support.
There you go. All right, Kev. Hey.
Because that's where you'll get a lot of the people that do this type of fiddling with Chrome that you may find somebody that's already done it.
Okay, Kev, I appreciate that.
You know what this reminds me of? I was talking to a guy last week, and I told him I built a tube amp for my son for guitar. Little did I know, this guy actually designs and builds studios, radio studios, and guitar studios and music studios for people. He went off to planet Pluto and back, and I'm still sitting there with my eyes glazed over because he specializes in this stuff.
I think that may have happened for most of our listeners and everybody in the studio here, but Cal, thank you for digging out that user group because excellent way of handling those problems.
This is really interesting. Now he's got me amazed because I'm looking at this, and it's kind of like this whole ESP8266 is kind of like shortwave for Wi-Fi and stuff like that. You can do all sorts of crazy things with it. You can hook up hardware to it and control it.
You know, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking ham radio or shortwave when he was talking about this.
Well, folks, you don't have to have anything quite that complicated to call in here. As a matter of fact, I hope that Mark from Royal Oak has a little simpler question for us.
Well, here's the good part about it.
Easy questions here.
The good part about it is from this point, we're going downhill and there's nothing to lose.
So if you have a simple question for us, that's quite all right. 800-859-0957. Hi, Mark from Royal Oak. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Good afternoon. I have a HP CPU. And I'm looking to upgrade the processor on that from an i5 to looking at an i7.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to be concerned about different plugins on those? Are there different sockets for those?
I don't think you're going to be able to plug an i7 chip into an i5 socket. It's not going to work that way.
I see. They're completely different sockets on those.
Yes, I'm almost positive on that. And I got to be honest with you. How old is that computer?
2012.
Oh, that's not too old. But you know something? Why would you want to just swap out the processor on it? What are you trying to achieve?
The unit's running fine, pretty much. And I thought, well, let's just go for a little faster processor and then some more RAM, because it is a little short on RAM.
Do the RAM first.
Yeah.
Okay. And put it in there and see how it performs, because you'll be surprised that it will probably perform a lot better than you'd expect just by putting more RAM in there. I don't even think you'll have to swap out the processor.
Well, and the other thing is going to solid-state hard drives.
Oh,
You can such a performance boost on a solid-state hard drive than you...
The only challenge, though, is getting enough space on one, because if you need a really large hard drive, solid-state is going to cost you a lot of money.
How about hybrid?
Hybrid would be the next way to go.
And that's what you did with your Mac. You got a hybrid with, 64 gig as like the first, you know, is it a 64 gig?
It's got, this one's got 16 gig of SSD, and then it's got a 1 terabyte hard drive on it.
Right, and so when you load Windows, Windows is really only about 2 gigabytes. So if you had a Windows system and you got a hybrid like that with a 16 gig, Windows would load... and that was my finger snapping fast.
Nothing broke here in the studio. Yeah.
Because what these hybrid, and you were explaining this to me, Cal, well, how these hybrids do is the most frequently used files that are accessed on the hard drive are put onto the solid station portion.
Right,
that's integrated within the software on the hard drive itself.
Correct.
Okay. Hey, Mark, what's your purpose for doing this? What are you trying to achieve?
Oh, I just have multiple programs open all the time, multiple windows on there, and I thought, okay.
So that's not going to help you a whole bunch.
Memory is definitely the best way to go.
These guys, I think, were right. You could do it, but most everybody online is saying that it's not worth it.
Mark, we're going to have to toddle along here, but thank you for your question. Thank goodness it was easier. 800-859-0957. Waiting for your call. By the way, I want to say a quick thanks to the guys behind the glass, Eric Dorsch and Mike Stepp, for being in here. And Shannon, I saw Shannon back there, too. Thank you, guys, for all of your help. Now, listen, we got to get them busy back there. There's a phone line open right now at 800-859-0957 for whatever question you have. But we have a very special resource in studio here, and I just want to tell you quickly about that. We were fortunate. By the way, this is a two-hour show. You're only hearing this hour live, but we do an hour before that. And we had Michelle Gilbert is with us. She's a vice president of PR at Comcast. And Michelle was in to talk about an article that we have a link to on our homepage. And it is simply called the 4 Tips for Spring Technology Checkup. Okay. And thank you very much for that, by the way, Michelle, for giving it that to us to pass on.
My pleasure.
And by the way, you can listen to our podcast and listen to the whole discussion that's there. Bill Babbitt is with her. And Bill, you are working with, in particular, with networks, right?
Correct.
In the background. So what I want to do, folks, is tell you this. If you have Comcast as your provider and you have been having some concerns about whether you're getting as fast a throughput as you should or not, this is a good time for you to call, because we have this very special resource in studio with us at 800 again. 859-0957. Ed, you were going to say something before we talk to Bill.
I was going to say, you just opened up a big old can of worms when you said that. But, you know, a previous caller was talking about, is it possible for me to upgrade an i5 processor system and actually put an i7 in there? In some cases, the answer is yes. You can do that. But is it really worth it? There are 4 or 6 different socket types for the i5, i7.
Okay.
And what they were saying is basically, if you buy an off-the-shelf computer, they're not going to give you a motherboard that supports an i7 speed front bus, and you throw an i7 in there. So if you buy an off-the-shelf like an HP or a Dell, it really isn't worth it. But if you're a homegrown person and you bought that brand new Asus motherboard, right, and you're going to go, I'm going to get the i5 processor, and then a year down the road, I'll throw the i7 in there. That would probably work for
Bill,
you.
Bill, you were nodding vigorously. You were that.
Absolutely.
It's the old.
I want to make sure I describe it right, because you explained it to me, and it made perfect sense, so I wanted to reiterate it.
Yeah, Cal?
You know, the coolest thing about this, having these folks from Comcast in the studio with us, don't tell anybody, listen. You don't have to wait on hold. They'll get you really fast here. You know, you don't even have to get in line. You just call in, you got an answer instantly. But I do want to ask a question of Bill for sure.
Sure.
Let's talk about security on our wireless with Comcast.
Yep.
Is there a way that we set it ourselves, or does Comcast as a service take care of that for us?
We make a recommendation, right, to the security level that you have. Now, each security level, it's going to affect your speeds. So we run into open networks, right? Customers like that speed with an open network for their Xbox. Never a good idea to have an open network. Some customers tell us they like the 128-bit WAP encryption, right? Not very robust. WPA, PSK2, right? That's what we recommend. That's what we set up when we go to your house.
Now, can I go in and change that password after you set it up, or is it locked to the router itself?
No, absolutely. It's your network. You can make it, you know, whatever you want your SSID to be and whatever you want your security password to be.
Can you direct us to where under Xfinity's website you would go to get instructions to do that,
yeah,
or is that something you'd like to call in for?
No, Xfinity Help and Support. I believe there's some VOD content, too, that explains
VOD
how to...
VOD is...
Video on demand,
Thank you very much.
We won't speak in
acronyms.
Because
we're radio here,
right,
and we always just do radio on demand. So I understand the confusion.
Which would be ROD.
Yeah, ROD.
So you can get help and support in those places. It'll explain to you how. And then, obviously, there's your forums online where everybody's talking about those Xfinity routers and what you can do to configure.
Right. Because there was a point in time where it was pretty much locked out, but it that's been reversed because they realized people like customizing things.
Right.
Yes.
And when a tech comes to your house, right, you make sure you tell them, hey, I want the network set up my way, and they should be asking customers too.
I want it called Big Bob's Network, and I understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want it, my dog's named Winnie. Make it Winnie, please. Whatever you want, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, again, the number, 800-859-0957. If you have a question, please, for us about computers in general, or if you have a question in particular about your Comcast service, please feel free to ask. And that's 800-859-0957. I want to get back to something, Bill, you mentioned in the last hour because it fascinated me. I had no idea that this was the case, that you can actually slow down your Wi-Fi connection by using older devices. And you said something about your router only speaks one language?
Correct. So let's talk about wireless B, G, and N, right? Mixed networks.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got, like, use myself as an example. I'm home alone on a Saturday. My family's gone. I run a mixed mode network on 2.4 gigahertz. I have my iPhone, right? That's mm-hmm. connected to N. My speeds are great. Average about 54 megabits per second on that band. My kids come home. My daughter has an older iPod, which is only wireless B, right?
Mm-hmm.
She connects. Now I'm only doing those B speeds on my device.
So you can blame it on her.
I can blame it on her, absolutely. So we talk about upgrading technology, right? And then you can divide your network up. I know you had asked about running a 5 gigahertz network that's locked out for just you, right? I do that at my house, too. I have my 5
yep.
gigahertz
That's where you
band.
Get your speeds back then.
Right, that's okay. where I get my speeds back. And then I put the rest of the family on the 2.4 gigahertz network.
Yeah. Yep. See, because otherwise they would blame you for not upgrading their technology, all of your kids' technology,
absolutely.
Right?
Ooh, you're right, that could backfire.
Hey,
yeah, we've
got a question from...
It would in our house.
we have a question from an old friend of ours, Paul, who used to be in Harbor Beach and now is in Houston, Texas. Hi, Paul, how you doing? Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Oh, you don't have to welcome me. I've been there so long.
Now, you have a question about hotspots.
Yes. This is for your Comcast person.
Sure.
Okay, there was talk a few months ago about Comcast making hotspots all over the place using people's modems from Comcast.
Yes.
They would have,
being rolled out in the Texas area as one of the first pilot areas, right?
Yeah, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, we've rolled it out. We've got millions of hotspots all across the nation. And the idea behind it is a separate SSID so that anybody who is an Xfinity customer can use that hotspot in order to save on their wireless data plan and have the experience that they expect with Xfinity. Now, you as a customer... If you don't want to turn on that second SSID, you have the option to turn it off. We kind of think of it as a pay it forward. If you know, the mm-hmm. more people who are willing to use it, the more hotspots that will be available.
It's almost like a mesh network in that sense, isn't it? It's not quite, but I mean, it's kind of like, right. Am I right on that, Bill? It's Yeah,
absolutely. It's kind of a mesh network, right? And what it does is, so I'm at my house, I have my Xfinity, and I go to my buddy's house, I want my same Xfinity speeds, mm-hmm. and then we can reciprocate that, right? When he comes to my house, I don't have to put him on my main network with his older computer. I can say, nope, sign into Xfinity, and you get your same speeds through the Xfinity network. So,
because he's an existing Xfinity customer.
Correct.
There is an authentication that takes place initially, first
absolutely.
Time, and that's your Xfinity ID and password.
Correct.
Once that's set up on your device,
right.
smart device, or whatever it is. You, any Comcast or Xfinity device that's set up that way, you get free internet access.
Correct. And I'll tell you, my children love it because when they go to Starbucks, when they go to the library, any place that has Xfinity, they can sign in and get their same speeds and the same experience that they get at home, right?
And the point that was made early on is that you're not going to compromise the existing Comcast customers' home wireless by turning this network on.
Correct.
Comcast or an Xfinity has made
But you have to have a newer modem, don't you, for that, though?
Yeah, you do have to have the newer XB3 modem now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. What's the modem called? The
XB3.
XB3, okay.
The caller was going to say something?
Yeah, now I can go out and purchase a modem right now and not have to pay you for the rental fee on your modem. And this brings up 2 points. Can I still do that if you want me to be a hotspotter on that new modem that you just mentioned? That's part number
one. In other words, the part A of the question is, instead of using the Comcast modem that has these dual functions,
which he has to pay a monthly rental fee on,
right?
Yeah, can I go out and buy an off-the-counter one?
Absolutely.
That has that same function.
No, it does not have the Xfinity Wi-Fi in it.
There you go.
That was a great question.
That was
good question. What was your second part, Paul?
The second part is that if I purchase, which my son already has here, he has the modem that is not from you people, and if we run into a problem and we have to call you up for repair and have a serviceman come out, do I get charged because it's not your modem?
We don't charge when it is our devices, mm-hmm. but if you want us to service and it's a separate device, yes, there would be a charge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody else's device, Paul.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I wanted to bring up
one
other point is that related to those hotspots, something to think about. You know, we invite people into our home and we trust the people we invite into their home, our home, so we don't think, why would we want them to use that second SSID? But you know, you've got kids. Your kids, the friendships go in and out, and sometimes kids can do things, people can do things that you wouldn't necessarily trust. So it's to support, to secure your own network and to keep it secure.
I gotcha. There's another way of securing it. Hey, okay, Paul, thank you for calling, buddy.
Thank you for taking the call. Take care, guys.
As always, it's good to have him on, and he asks good questions as well. Hey, Steve from Detroit and David from Sterling Heights will be back with you in just a moment, and we're going to wrap things up as well with Michelle Gilbert here and with Bill Babbitt in from Comcast and with our usual group of suspects in here answering your questions. Looking forward to helping you, as we do every Saturday at this time at 800-859-0957. And don't forget, then, on Sunday nights, we post the two-hour podcast of this program from our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Well, thank you very much for being with us here. This is how this works, folks, and we work all spring and summer. We are here from 5 until 6 o'clock, and the door is always open here during this time. Bring your questions in on your computers. We, free for nothing, we'll be happy to take a crack at answering them. Sometimes if they're really complicated, we can refer you to somebody who can help. And by the way, speaking, referring you to somebody, thank you very much, for being in here. Michelle Gilbert, Vice President for Human Relations. Public Relations at Comcast. It's been so good to have you.
My job.
I just changed your job.
And here's your
public
raise.
Is human, so it kind of goes together.
And Bill Babbitt's here as well. Thanks, Bill, so much for helping.
You're welcome.
With our network connection questions from Comcast. By the way, our first hour of the program, we did a lot more talking about their 4 tips for cleaning up your technology. Some really, really interesting stuff in there you should listen to. Again, starting on Sunday night, our podcast with Comcast on it will be there available for you for download.
Say that 3 times fast.
From our internetadvisor.net homepage. Okay, let's go back to, we've got Dave from Sterling Heights with us here. Dave, how you doing? Can we help you? Hello, David. David may have just dozed off. So let's go to Steve. Hey, Steve from Detroit, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
My computer network got something called the Tesla crypto virus. And it basically encrypted all of my Word documents, all my pictures.
Oh.
I called an IT company. They were able to kill the crypto virus, but everything's still encrypted.
Yeah, encrypted, yeah.
And from what I understand about this, because we've received several emails from this, and I've replied to them, that unless you have one of the earliest crypto viruses, there's no way of decrypting this. Unless you pay the ransom of $200 or $300. Matter of fact, there were several police departments in the United States that actually did pay the ransom just to get their data back.
Right.
Because they hadn't backed it up, right?
Because they hadn't backed it up.
Now, have you backed your material up, Dave, your documents and things like that? Have they been backed up?
Well, we were doing nightly backups, and then Java forced an update through, and when the Java update went through, it turned the backup off, and unfortunately, I didn't double check. And
How long ago did that happen, Steve?
The crypto virus?
The backup breakdown.
About 3 months ago.
Ouch.
Okay. Well, that's not really that bad. I mean, it depends how much information you actually have on your computer.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, quite a bit.
Ouch, 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 ouch. So you...
but here's what the deal is. He'll get back all of his data up to that particular date.
Yes, yes.
And then he'll just build forward from there. So it's not like the whole world is completely lost. It's just that what you'll have to end up doing basically is you will wipe your computer clean, and then you will reload the operating system, put all the latest and greatest patches to the operating system on it, add whatever antivirus protection that you want to put on top of that, and then you'll go back and get that data that you have backed up on that old backup, restore it back onto your machine, and then just go forward from there.
But it does sound, and folks, we have to say this, and you said it, the bottom line is if you get hit with one of these crypto viruses where it says, you know, pay us $300 and we'll give you your information back, first of all, that's blackmail, and I don't, you're going to be on the hook from then on for these people. But the best defense against that is to back up now. And I know this has been our mantra from forever, Cal.
And we were talking about backup solutions. You were talking about cloud services.
Yes.
Yes.
And there are many different cloud services out there that you can use to back up. But some people have so much data and so many photos or videos that pretty soon you cannot use the standard free cloud services. You have to start paying for those, you know, cloud services.
Well, but
services.
Cal and I pay for CrashPlan. What is it, about 50?
I pay for CrashPlan.
Is it $50 a year?
Well, I pay $150 a year for it. I can back up to 10 computers on it, and I can back up unlimited amounts of data. Matter of fact, one of my computers is a terabyte and a half, and it's fully backed up.
So, Steve, I don't know, what had you been using for your backup solution before this?
Well, you know, I'm not a techie.
Okay. Neither.
I brought a IT company in that, you know, and they set everything up and it was working fine for, you know, for a long time, and now all of a sudden, you know, this hit. And I used to make a habit of, you know, saying, bringing them in every now and then and saying, prove to me there's something there. Because I don't trust anybody, but then, you know, life gets in the way and time gets away from you, and I didn't do it for a while, and now this.
You're kind of like a perfect candidate for an online backup solution.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't have a full IT department that's there to constantly keep an eye on that sort of thing, at least with an online backup situation, provided that you have your computers connected and online on a regular basis, that'd be about the best way for you to go. That way you don't necessarily always have to check it per se.
Oh, and I bet you he's paying more than that just for have that IT company create that service for him years ago and then to make a follow-up. He's probably paying more than the $100 or $25 that it would cost for a cloud backup solution.
Well, not to mention that the backup is just the cost of business anyway.
Yeah.
If you're running a business and you're not backing up your computers, you're just skating on thin ice. Yeah. There's only two types of people out there, those who wish they backed up and those who need to back up. You just make your choice.
You know, the other thing too, Steve, is that if you get into a situation like this, I know with CrashPlan at least, for instance, if you've got a business that's running and suddenly get locked up by this kind of thing, they will actually deliver a hard drive to you for a certain amount of money.
Sure.
But they will literally give you a hard drive with all of your most recent stuff backed up on it, ready to roll.
And just like Gary says, large companies like that are backing up your data, they have to always have the most aggressive programs out there to make sure these type of viruses cannot attack your data, so it's always protected.
Now, Gary, one of the things you said is you're a subscriber and for your whole family to Microsoft's 365 program, right?
That's right.
And with that, you get a lot of storage.
Oh, yeah.
Do. And if you if it's just you have to go more, it's cheap to buy more.
Yeah.
So it's like I just.
But they've been increasing their amount of stuff that you can store online incredibly.
It is, and so I never use my C drive on my computer at all. I just don't use it. I always back up to the cloud. Yep. I always store the cloud and back up in the cloud.
So, Steve, we don't want to sound hard-hearted here, because the bottom line is, if you've been hit by that crypto virus, those things are locked, period. And then you have, however, backups at least up to last 3 months ago, right?
Yes.
And then I would say, you know, make sure you got that material. As you said, show me that you got that 3 months of material, or up to 3 months ago. And then I would say you need to really seriously think about investing either in a cloud service like
CrashPlan, Mozy, Carbonite, whichever one you want to use.
Whichever one you want.
Microsoft 365, whichever one.
Yeah, there are free ones up there you can use, you know.
He's a business. He's not going to do free.
No, I agree.
He's going to be doing, he's going to pay the price, but it's just the price of doing business.
Yeah, right. And you can back them all up in one place.
Correct.
And they provide you additional services as well. So
before we wrap up, Steve, anything else that you had a question on?
No more questions, but I did do the off-site backup the next day.
Good for you.
Signed up for service because it's something you have to pay attention to, unfortunately, in today's technology world.
Yep.
On a daily basis, and
absolutely.
People have to get by me, and it's the penalty, I guess, I have to pay.
And Steve, make sure you're not alone. We've all been there.
No, you are not alone there, my friend. Sorry that it had to happen to you, Steve, but take care of yourself. Hey, I want to thank you again, all of you, for being here, my crew as well. And Michelle, thank you so much for stepping in.
Oh, you're welcome. It was fun.
It was a lot of fun. And by the way, again, go to InternetAdvisor.net and you will see, you can click and read those spring technology checkup tips. And Bill, thanks so much as well for being with
us. Thanks for having me.
A lot of great help from folks from Comcast. We really appreciate that. Mike Brennan, thank you for arranging that. Guys, thank you. Next week, Gary and I won't be here, but the guys will be here. We have a whole bunch of people coming in to answer your questions. And if you have a question during the week, simply go to InternetAdvisor.net, click on that Contact Us button, send us an email, and we'll do our very best to get you an answer or connect you with some resources. And don't forget, again, on Sunday night, we post the 2 hours of our podcast. That's our previous hour plus this live one with the questions, all there for you to download and listen to at your leisure. On behalf of all the guys here, I'm Foster Brown. Have a great day.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find show notes for this podcast or others, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.